Welcome to Season 3 of History Books and Wine. I'm your host, Eliza Knight. Join me for weekly happy hours with our guests as we discuss three of my favorite things, history, books, and wine. So pour a glass of vino and let's dive into the past. Hello there, History Books and Wine lovers. This is your host, Eliza Knight here, and I can't wait for this summer because I have a brand new book coming out. As you know, one of the reasons Lori and I started this podcast was our love of wine, history, and books. And guess what? I'm not just a podcast host, I'm also an author. So I have to ask you, do you like royals? How about corgis? Releasing on June 11th is my book, The Queen's Faithful Companion, an endearing and vivid story told from the unique multi-narrative viewpoints of a young Queen Elizabeth, Hannah Fenwick, the fictionalized keeper of the Queen's corgis, and yes, Susan, the Queen's corgi, whose love and loyalty were boundless. A reigning queen, a loyal servant, and a faithful companion, this is one book you're not going to want to miss. Early readers can't get enough of the Queen's corgis, and I admit, I'm also completely obsessed. Right now, you can pre-order The Queen's Faithful Companion anywhere books are sold, or you can visit my website, www.elizaknight.com, to pre-order there. Happy reading! Today, we're excited to have a guest joining us, Rachel Linden. On this episode, we're going to talk about Rachel's book, Recipe for a Charmed Life, French Cuisine, Good Luck Charms, and Family Legacies. Welcome, Rachel.
Oh, thank you for having me, Eliza. I'm so happy to be here.
I am so happy that you've joined me today. So before we dive into this intriguing episode, I always like to find out what our guests are drinking. So what are you having today?
Oh my gosh. Well, my brother-in-law introduced us to Vino Verde, the green Portuguese table wine.
That sounds yummy.
Oh, it's so good. And I'm obsessed with anything that has effervescence. And it's just this light, crisp, and it has a beautiful, like, sea glass green color and then the lightest effervescence. So I am enjoying some Vino Verde.
That sounds amazing. Mm-hmm. I wish I was having that. I am instead having a red wine, which is also really good. It's a Cab Sav, which is one of my favorite varietals. And it's called Fog and Light. It's a Paso Robles, which I also really like that area, I guess.
Oh, yum.
Yeah.
That sounds enjoyable too. You can't go wrong with a Cab Sav. I don't think I've ever had one.
I love red wine like pretty much all year round. Although when it starts to get warmer, I will switch to white, and then stuff with effervescence becomes like the thing to have. So I'm gonna have to try that.
Yeah. Right. Try some Vino Verde.
I definitely will. So today we're gonna chat about your book, Recipe for a Charmed Life. Can you start off by telling our listeners what your book is about and how you came up with the idea to tell this story?
Ooh, yes. All right. So my book is about an American chef in Paris who in one night loses her cheating French boyfriend, who she shuts in a refrigerator, her sous chef position, and her sense of taste. When she wakes up the next morning, everything tastes bitter. So definitely having the worst night of her life. Yeah. And she receives a mysterious invitation from her estranged mother who says, come to San Juan Island in the Pacific Northwest. There's something that you need to know about our family. So she goes from Paris to San Juan Island to try to reconnect with the mother that left when she was 5 and to try to regain her spark in the kitchen.
Wow.
I know. It's so fun. This book has all the things I love. It has food. It has exotic places because it's Paris. And then it's these gorgeous San Juan Islands. And then it has a little bit of magical realism, second chances at love. Did I say food? I said food. I'm going to say it again. Yummy food. And family complexities and, you know, someone finding their sense of purpose and place, which they're all the things I love to write about.
And those are all the things I love to read about. So that's pretty awesome.
It's a perfect pairing.
It's perfect. So I love to cook and I love books that involve cooking. They're always fun. But I wanted to know, so cooking and baking seem to be central themes in your books. Have you trained in the culinary arts or is cooking a passion of yours? And what sort of research did you have to do as far as like cooking or French cuisine or anything like that to write this book?
Such good questions. I did not train in the culinary arts. I trained at my grandmother's knee. So I grew up with my grandmother and my mother in the kitchen all the time. We grew most of our own food and we made made our own bread. I grew up very, very much Midwestern home cooking cooks they were both excellent cooks and bakers. And so I'm up from a big Italian family. And so the kitchen is the heart of the home. And so I just grew up where food and cooking and being together around cooking were a huge central part of our lives. And so I grew up just loving food and loving what food means to, you know, as a way to bring people together, this sense of connection that happens around the table. And so when I started writing, I did not intend for food to be a theme. I just naturally put in the stuff I love. And about book number two, my editor called me and she's like, okay, we need to have a chat. I am so hungry when I read your book. She said she had to keep an entire drawer of snacks when she was reading the manuscript.
Oh, that's hilarious.
And she was like, this is an aspect of your writing. You just need to lean into it and you need to embrace it. And so I was like, done, happy to do that. And so I get to do the yummiest research for these books because I do hands-on research by making things or by traveling places. And so I went to Paris because I hadn't been there in a number of years. And my research, you know, you're a historical fiction writer. You do real hardcore in-depth research. My research is wandering around eating things.
I think that still counts.
It was so yummy. So I just walked around Paris and ate as many macarons as I could.
The best kind of research. And to be fair, we did have a historical fiction author on the podcast who was writing a book that was set in Paris, and she also went to Paris and ate all the things. So you're doing exactly the
same. All right. I'm doing the same research that she did. Yeah. That's like research light. It's like all the super fun, yummy parts of research where you just eat things and then ask people questions about what they're doing.
Well, and I think people like reading about that too, because it answers some of the questions they might have, but like your editor, it also makes them like hungry for things. So now if your book has got, you know, macaroons or something in it, then the reader, whenever they eat a macaroon, they're going to think about your book.
Yes. And this one, you know how bookstagrammers are putting those helpful trigger warnings on reviews? So I am getting trigger warnings for this new one, Recipe for a Charmed Life, for hunger. Oh. So many reviews are like, okay, just want to warn you all, do not read this on an empty stomach. Make sure you have food. Make sure you have macarons. Make sure you have snacks handy because it's going to make you so hungry. And I was like, is there a point where it tips over into food porn? Like, is there where have I like crossed some line where like now I'm just making people super hungry? So I don't know.
You might have. So you might need to start filling like your Instagram with like, okay, if you're on chapter 5, like this is what you should be having.
Yes. Oh, that's a great idea. Yeah. Pairing foods with different chapters.
Yes.
Chapter, you could be eating such and such.
I love that.
I spoke at a book club yesterday and they had made all the foods from the book. It was the
cutest
thing. Oh,
that's so cool. I love that.
It was so sweet. One woman had made her grandma's rice pudding recipe and one woman had made the like citron mousse that's in the back of the book. And it was the most delicious book club. I wanted to stay forever.
That sounds fun. I want to go to that book club.
Me too. Yeah, I was like, can I come every month?
Seriously. So Georgia, the main character in your book, her neighbor's name is Cole, who also happens to be her love interest, right? And he is an oyster farmer. So I'm actually interested in oyster farming. I don't know why. I feel like I read it in a book once. But so my question is about this grueling work of oyster farming. Did you have to do any research in Cole's industry? And why did you decide to have him be an oyster farmer?
Okay, full disclosure, I love oysters. I grew up in the Midwest where oysters are not really, at least when I was growing up, were not really a common thing. Mm-hmm. And then I married a Pacific Northwesterner and moved to the Pacific Northwest where I live on an island where 10 yards away are just dozens and dozens of oysters in Puget Sound. They're just oysters everywhere. So it's very common. And there are lots of oyster farms. And so I am so fascinated by oyster farming and this beautiful on the water. And it is grueling. Particularly, I think it's easier in the Pacific Northwest because our weather is less cold than the Northwest, like where you guys are on the East Coast. But So my research for this, I read an interesting book called Shucked that was all about a woman. Ooh. You should, if you're interested, look at it. Yeah. It's in-depth at oyster farming. By the end, I was like, I feel like I could oyster farm. I feel like I could do this. And then we went, my husband helped me with this grueling research. We just went to different oyster farms around the Pacific Northwest and sampled oysters. And then I talked to some of the oyster farmers.
Oh, that's cool.
And just learned what the process is and how it works. And it's wonderful. It's really ecologically friendly. It's really sustainable. It's delicious. And I chose oyster farming because I just thought it would be hilarious and fun to have the love interest wear chest high orange, international distress orange rubber overalls.
Yeah.
Like, can you make a guy a hot oyster farmer? Let's see if it can be done. And I just thought it was such a fun occupation and fun aspect of the story. But I also set the story in this little farmhouse that does exist on San Juan Island. And next to it is an oyster farm called Westcott Bay Oyster Farm. And so I totally used those two things as the setting for the story. And they're just very magical. We go every year for our anniversary to have oysters.
Oh, I love that.
Pick your own oysters and hand shuck them and sit and look at the bay where they've been grown. It's very fun. So that's the part of the story for part of the setting for Recipe for a Charmed Life.
So you've shuck your own oysters? Have you
Yes.
Do you wear gloves when you do it?
Yeah, I've got the gloves and the knife and everything.
That's so crazy because my dad, I've watched him shuck oysters because we live on the East Coast here, and where he has a house, they have some oyster farms and things too. And he normally wears gloves, but I do remember like this one time he got it like right in the meaty part of your palm.
Oh yeah. There's an element of danger to it. So when you get it open, you feel this thrill of like, yes, almost like this hunter, gatherer, conqueror, like, yes, I have opened this oyster shell. Now I will enjoy the fruits of the sea.
That's awesome. So we opened our third season of the podcast this year talking about genealogy and family history, which I think a lot of people are passionate about digging into their past as well as the past of the people in their family. So in your book, Georgia delves into her family's past and legacies. Can you talk to us a little bit about why this was important to the book? And also, do you like researching genealogy?
You know, I am interested in the human story. And I am interested in my own family stories because we have some crazy stories in our background. We've got bootleggers, we've got a French pirate, we've got all kinds of interesting things. But I'm not so interested in like the family tree genealogy as I am in the stories of where our family came from. And for Georgia, it's not as much about genealogy for her, but it's about her sense of place and identity. So I'm fascinated by people's stories and by people's sense of place and identity. And so for Georgia, a big part of this story is about her learning who she is and letting what she does spring from her own identity and her family legacy, and this secret that she didn't know that kind of changes everything and is the key that unlocks who she really is and her place in the world.
And I love that.
Yeah, that's why I did that.
That's awesome. I think a lot of us kind of go through periods like that, like looking into our past and seeing like, is this why I am the way I am? And is this going to change me knowing this? Or am I just like this because of some past life? It's pretty interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So part of your book touches on career burnout. I feel like in today's society, burnout happens a lot, myself included. What was your decision for putting that into the book? And how do you deal with burnout yourself?
That's such a good question. I think what I had never thought about Georgia and career burnout, but you're right. That's another way of saying it. You know, she's lost. All she can taste is bitter because that's what her life has become, and her uncovering her true identity and her joy and delight in what she's doing, kind of uncovering what she's really meant to be doing in the world, brings back her abilities. And so I think I wanted to talk about why we do what we do, why we do the things we do, and that what we do shouldn't be the thing that defines us or that we find our identity in, but what we do should flow out of who we actually are. And I think that's a great way to avoid burnout if we are doing something that brings us deep satisfaction. So my dad is a theology professor, and I will call him and he's like, I'm living my best life reading this treatise on John's, whatever. And it is the most, it sounds so boring to me. And he'll be like, I can't believe I get to do this. And I'm like, that is amazing, because that means that you are doing the thing that is deep inside of you, the thing that you need to be doing. And so, and I feel that way with stories. People will be like, oh, it's like pulling teeth for me to write. I can't imagine writing a book. How do you do it? And I'm like, no. When I sit down, it feels like I'm eating cake every day. Yeah. Because
that's the easy part.
This is what I'm meant to do. This is the thing that brings me joy. And so I think if you are doing something that brings deep joy and satisfaction, that is, it probably significantly decreases your burnout, because it's actually feeding your inner self.
Yeah, I could totally see that. And I agree, because writing, I mean, I think for writers too, it's like our catharsism. Like we kind of just got that way. I mean, I know for myself, like I wrote a lot growing up just to kind of escape. And it turns out like that's the best sort of job there is, right? So I think that comes naturally for us, which is awesome.
Yeah. And I think, somehow you and I, Eliza, have figured out how to have a career where we can sit in our pajamas for 10 months a year, making things up in a room by ourselves, which to me is like fabulous. But I think a lot of people may be in jobs where they cannot achieve that kind of satisfaction. And I think then probably a really good way to try to avoid burnout is to figure out what does bring you the satisfaction and do it on the side as much as you can as a hobby, but just to keep feeding that internal creative engine the best that you can, and not live from a place where it's just task and just productivity and where you feel like a machine. But you know, if you have a job that may feel like a little bit of a grind, can you come home and have an herb garden or a flower garden, because that makes you feel alive and joyful? So I think we got to figure out where you can have that creative outlet that feels like it feeds you, even if it can't be like for us sitting in our pajamas for 10 months a year.
Exactly.
Or loungewear. I don't want to assume you're in your pajamas.
My husband calls it my blanket. It is like a knee length sweatshirt. And it's basically like, I'm just wearing a blanket. It's so wonderful.
That's amazing. Exactly. Yes. Okay.
So your book has magical realism and lucky charms, and I love how you weave all magical realism into your stories. The Magic of Lemon Drop Pie was one of my favorite reads last year. I listened to it on audio. It was amazing. Can you talk to us about why you enjoy magical elements in your novel and how you decide what they will be?
I love the element of a little bit of mystery and wonder, because I feel like life has a little bit of mystery and wonder. We don't understand everything, and we think we might, but we don't. And I love to put magical realism in to my stories in a way that always highlights the main character's emotional growth journey. So they're not just these random little things that weirdly happen. They're always these little sense of wonder and magic, like the little fairy dust sprinkles on the top of the story that are helping her get to this place of growth. They're helping her along the journey. And I enjoy using things from the natural world. So food, herbs, flowers. I just enjoy that because I love being outside. When I was a kid, I was just outside for hours and hours a day, barefoot, making up stories. Yeah. So I love to put that in my stories because I think the world is a beautiful and wondrous place. And I want to cultivate this sense that there's something more than what we can see. And there are greater forces at work for good. And that they're leading us to a place where there's more wonder, more joy, more fulfillment, us being more of who we're supposed to be.
I really, really love that. And I think that it's so true, like how magical the world really is. Like when you actually think about it, like if you walk through a forest, for example, and you look at all the different plants and little tiny things, like, I mean, I'm Irish. So growing up, like we all talked about like the fairies and things like that. And I actually believe that they're in there. So
I really want that to be true.
Yes, please be there. So thank you so much for sharing these fascinating answers. Can you tell us three fun facts you discovered while researching and writing your book?
Oh, yes, I can. Okay. First fun fact, the Eiffel Tower moves when you're at the top of it.
Oh my gosh.
I went up, so I was doing research in Paris, and we had my entire, like, my kids and my husband were there, and my son had a birthday, and he wanted to go to the top of the Eiffel Tower for his birthday. And we're like, that is the coolest thing. What a fun birthday. Like, what 8-year-old boy gets to, like, go to the top of the Eiffel Tower? So we did. I thought it would be enjoyable. The whole building moves in the wind. It was terrifying.
Oh my gosh.
They loved it. And I was like, can we go back down the elevator? This is terrifying.
Anyway, I would not like that.
Yeah, so that's something that did not make it into the story, but I was like, okay, I'm done. Never. I don't need to do that again. Done. Checked off. Another thing that I discovered is, so I did exhaustively sample macarons. I'm sort of an armchair expert now with macarons. And La Durée, which is in the story, I think does have the best macarons in the world. Ooh. As far as I can tell from my limited sampling, but as far as I can tell. And my favorite flavor is their orange blossom, which is really unusual and really amazing. And so I was so inspired by that orange blossom macaron that the next book that I just turned in, we've called it the Secret of Orange Blossom Cake. And it has a cake that is orange blossom flavored.
Oh, as of yum.
I was inspired by this macaron. So, and that takes place in Italy. So that's a fun one.
That's amazing.
Yeah. And then the third one is, I was so excited in this story to share San Juan Island with my readers. San Juan Island is just this little tiny island in Puget Sound in the Pacific Northwest in the Salish Sea. And it is just a magical place. Orca whales go by.
Oh,
there's
wow.
lavender. There's honey. There's all these just delicious, delightful things on this little dot of evergreen island. And so I loved getting to go and to experience, because, of course, I had to research. So I had to go to the winery. I had to go to all these different places on the island. And it's only a couple hours from me. My husband's family actually has a cabin there. So we spend time there every summer. So it's a really special place for us. And I was just so delighted to see that this little tiny speck in the corner of the United States has just an abundance of beauty and wonder. And so it was really fun to get to put that, you know, everybody loves Paris. Everybody knows what Paris is about, but San Juan Island has its own unique beauty and charm. And I love to get to put both of those. So I just packed out this story with like as much yumminess as I could.
So not only are people going to be super hungry while they read your books, they're going to be booking their travel, because I'm now adding the San Juan Island to my bucket list of places I need to visit.
Yeah, it's just this little postage stamp of beauty and goodness and yumminess. And you can only get there by ferry. So you take like an hour and a half ferry ride
through
islands, through jade green water, and sometimes
orcas so cool.
are there. It's so fun.
That sounds awesome. So is there anything else you'd like to share about your book, Recipe for a Charmed Life?
Oh, yes. One of the major themes that I think we didn't touch on yet is that there is a love story with the, you know, grouchy, handsome oyster farmer. But at its heart, this is a mother-daughter love story. This is about an estranged mother who's made some pretty big mistakes, and about her adult daughter who's kind of re-navigating their relationship and figuring out what it's going to look like from this point forward. And the main theme of the story is really about forgiveness and about how do we love those we love how do we forgive those we love when they hurt us deeply? And then how do we forgive ourselves when we're someone who accidentally hurts someone we love? And so those are major themes, and themes that I think most people can identify with, because family is complicated.
It is.
And messy. Yeah.
I love that. I love when books touch on things like that, because it really is almost like giving the reader an answer they might not have thought of before. Mm-hmm. And so it ends up being sort of like an escapist enjoyment read, but also maybe like a little bit of a therapy session. So.
Yeah. And that is my hope with every one of my books, that it feels delicious and delightful and like the, you know, really fun book you read on a plane to escape the fact you're in a tin tube in the sky. But then I always hope that there's a little golden nugget that people can take out of that story and put in their pocket for their own life.
I love that. Thank you for writing a book like that. All of your books like that.
My pleasure.
We are writers, but we're also readers. And so I always like to know, what are you reading?
Ooh. Well, I have a book club, and it's called the Brighten Your Day Book Club, and we only read books that make us feel happy. And then
love that.
Yeah, it's so fun. Last year we did all food-based books, and that was delicious. And so this year we make a lot of food, and then we eat, and then we drink champagne, and we read books that make us happy. So this month we're doing one of my favorite authors. We're doing Catherine Center's new book, Hello Stranger. And so that's what I'm working on. And it's just delightful at the end of the night with my little headlamp right before I go to sleep, just having a few minutes of happy brighten your day.
That sounds good. I'll have to add that one to my TBR as well. Mm-hmm. So where can readers and listeners find you?
The easiest places to find me are Instagram and Facebook, or they can go to my website, which is just www.rachellinden.com. And then I also run a little 10-minute interview show with two other authors where you have been. We've had you on, called the 10-Minute Book Talk. And that's fun because it's a little like Instagram and Facebook show, 10 minutes a week, where we interview a different author. So that's a fun place to find me and also find other authors and new books.
That is a great show. I highly recommend it, guys. So check it out.
The 10-Minute Book Talk.
Yes. Thank you so much for joining me today. This has really been fun. And I love learning about your research process and all the different information that you're putting into your books. And I think readers are going to really enjoy reading all of your stuff. So thank you.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been totally delightful.
We hope you have enjoyed today's episode with our guest, Rachel Linden. Be sure to subscribe so you don't miss the rest of this season's lineup. Coming up, we have several guests joining us for Happy Hour: Marie Boswick, Joan Meyerson, and Harper St. George. For more information about today's episode, including our guests' links and book buy links, click on the show notes. Follow the podcast on Instagram at History Books and Wine and Facebook at History Books and Wine for additional historical tidbits and updates. If you like what you heard today, please leave a review. Don't forget to subscribe to the show wherever you download your favorite episodes. That way you're notified every time a new episode is live. Subscribes and reviews help this podcast get noticed. Thank you for tuning in to this week's Happy Hour. Until next time, cheers and happy reading.